This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
There's an interesting medrash on this week's Sedra which raises a tremendous amount of discussion in Jewish philosophical thought. The medrash goes on the posuk that achar advoim ho'ele, after these things, ho'yo dvar Hashem el Avram, b'machazeh le'emor, the words of Hashem were to Avram in a vision, saying, then Hashem goes on to say, it's just before the famous Bris Ben Abasorim, Al tir Avram, don't fear Avram, ki anochi magen loch, I am a shield for you, and so he goes on. And it's on that the Midrash says, the Midrash brings another passage from Tehillim, that magen hu l'chol ha'chosim boy, that the Ribono Shel Olam is a shield for all those who trust in him. Rav Omar, Rav says, lo nisnu ha'mitzvahs ela l'tzaref bohem es abriyas. The mitzvahs were given only in order to ennoble, to purify, to refine the human being. V'chima ichpat le l'akadosh baruch hu l'misha shoychet min ha'tzover or misha shoychet min ha'ore. Does it really bother the Ribbono Shel Olam that much if one shechts an animal from the neck or from the back of the neck? Does it make that much difference to him? How you, if he's allowed you to eat an animal, is it terribly serious how you kill it exactly? So you see that the mitzvahs were given only to be mitzaref the brius, only to purify the humanity, only to refine them. There's a tremendous amount of discussion. I started preparing the shiur and just became such a big subject that we're only going to deal with a minute part of it this evening, and maybe we'll carry on with it either next week or some other time in the future. Firstly, what does it mean? The mitzvahs were only given to purify the human beings. Really, it doesn't make any difference which way you kill the animal, if it's this way or that way. But the mitzvahs were given to purify the human being. And how does that purify the human being exactly? Does it make much difference to the nobility of a human being if he shakes the animal from the front of the neck or from the back of the neck? That it's so serious. And furthermore, and this is really what I want to deal with this evening, is good. I can understand that there are certain mitzvahs which purify the human being. I can understand that there are certain parts of the mitzvah which purify the human being. So one can say, for example, Shabbos purifies a human being. That a human being has to take a day off at the end of the week, and that day he's disassociated from his business and he's disassociated from his regular weekday work, and he can dedicate himself to matters spiritual. I can understand that that is a purifying, has a purifying effect on a human being. But when you start getting into the details of Hilchos Shabbos, how does it work? What difference does it make to a human being's purity if he switches on the light or he doesn't switch on the light? What difference does it make to his purity if he folds his talus or he doesn't fold his talus? What difference does it make to his purity if he puts the kettle on the stove or he doesn't put the kettle on the stove? Is that going to be the big thing? And in order to understand this, there are several of the Rishonim already who speak on this Medrash. One of the important ones is the Rambam. The Rambam that we're referring to is in his Guide to the Perplexed in the Moreh Nevuchim, where there's a very important perek in the second, in the third section, Chelek Shlishi, Perek Kapvov. And there the Rambam discusses the whole question as to whether the mitzvahs have reasons or not. And he says, Yesh mi she'eino mevakesh lekach sibo klal, v'oimer ki kol ha-mitzvah is teitzos ha-rotzen ha-mukhra. There are some people who hold that, who do not seek reasons for mitzvahs at all, and they say all the mitzvahs are the result of the Ribbono Shel Olam's absolute will. That's all. That's how he wants it. Finished. There are no reasons. B'yesh mi she'omer ki kol tzivui v'azhoro mehem tetzas chochma. And some say no. Every tzivui, every instruction, and every warning that is recorded in the Torah is the result of rational thinking. It's all chochma. V'hamatoroboi tachlis musuyemis, and the goal is a particular end that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to achieve with that mitzvah. V'shekol ha-mitzvah is kulon yesh lo hemtayin, and every single mitzvah has reason. U'viglal to'eles musuyemis tzivo bohen, and the Ribbono Shel Olam instructed them for a particular purpose. Mashehim kulon yesh lo hemtayin ve'in anu yodim tayin me'miktsosom v'lein neida oifin ha-chokhmo bohen. Although there are some where we don't know the full reason, and we don't understand the wisdom that is behind them. Zuhi shitoseinu kulonu ha'aminim vayichidim. This is our view, the majority and the individuals, we all hold this way. Loshon akosu b'kach borur, and it's clear from the Torah, and he goes on to bring proofs that that's how we hold, that all the mitzvahs have rational reasons. It can be that there are reasons that we don't know, there can be reasons we don't understand, but every mitzvah has a reason. And the Ribbono Shel Olam wants a specific result from the performance of every mitzvah. That's the Rambam Shita. The Rambam then poses a question from this Medrash. But before we do the question of the Rambam, okay, let's do the question of the Rambam first, then I'll do the Ramban's answer. Elo shani matzasi loshon lechachomim zal bivreshis rabo. That says the Rambam, I have found words of Chazal in Medrash Rabba. Nire mimenu be'ion rishon, it would appear at first glance, ki miktsas ha-mitzvahs ein lohem tam, elo etzem atzivu. But some of the mitzvahs don't have any reason, but just the commandment themselves. That's the whole thing, it is the instruction and that's the end of it. Veloi kavona bekach tachlis acheres. And there's no other intention apart from the mitzvah itself. The loy tzeilis mitzuyusis, and not some other end result. V'hu amram sham, and he quotes this medrash that we've just learned. V'afal pisha aloshna zeh tamua, and even though this language is very strange and difficult, ma'od, very extremely, v'loy nimsa doyme loy b'divreim, and there's no other chazal that says a similar thing, hinei bi'arti boi biur ashmiyocha oisei, I have explained this medrash, and I will give you that explanation. And he goes on to do so. Before we go on to do so, we need to understand what it is that the Rambam finds difficult in this particular Medrash. The Rambam has laid down the principle, or firstly he has introduced the chapter, with the fact that there are two views as to whether each mitzvah needs to be understood in terms of some end result that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from the mitzvah, or we must just accept that that's the Ribbono Shel Olam's will and that's the end of it. And he says his view is that every mitzvah has its reason and its purpose. Sometimes we understand, sometimes we don't. We've got to attempt to understand. At the end of the very perek, he says he's going to carry on, in fact, revealing some of the reasons for some of the mitzvahs. He says, I'll explain it to you until there will be only very few mitzvahs, extremely little, that I will not be able to explain. And those will be the mitzvahs which I don't yet understand, says the Rambam. It shows that even the mitzvahs which he can't explain, he holds it's still because of a lack of understanding on his part, but he hopes that as he grows older he'll be able to explain them too. So Rambam holds right through that it is possible to explain the mitzvahs, and he sets about doing so. But he finds this medrash very difficult. What is it that he finds so difficult about the medrash? The medrash says, surely the Ribbono Shel Olam couldn't care less if you shecht an animal from the front or from the back. What big difference does it make? So you see, the Torah was only given to purify the human beings. The Ramban says, this is the Ramban in Dvorim Kafbeis on the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen, the Ramban says he doesn't know what the Ramban's problem is. It's clearly the purpose of this medrash is to show that the benefit in the mitzvahs is to us, not to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He doesn't get anything out of it. He was full and he was complete and he was perfect. Long before the Torah was created, the Ribbono Shel Olam in his essence is complete. So what does he need the mitzvahs for? So we need to know that the mitzvahs are there. L'tzarech v'enes habrius, they're there to do us good. They're not there to do the Ribbono Shel Olam good. And he goes on, even the mitzvahs of davening to Hashem and praising Hashem and saying brochas to Hashem and remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim and all these mitzvahs that one might think Hashem gets some benefit from. No, this is the Ramban. The Ribbono Shel Olam gets no benefit from it at all. The purpose of the mitzvah is to purify us, not to purify them. You might often hear people saying, do a mitzvah, give the Ribbono Shel Olam nachas. That's, the Baruch Hashem doesn't get nachas from not doing a mitzvah. He gets a bit worried if we don't do mitzvahs. But it's not because of the nachas that we do the mitzvahs. We do the mitzvahs because we need them. We do the mitzvahs because without them, we lack tziruf, we lack nobility, we lack a certain type of purification without them. That's why we're instructed to do the mitzvahs, and that's why we do them. Not for any other reason. But the Rambam is worried by this Midrash, and he doesn't seem to take it that way. The Rambam seems to understand in the Midrash that loy nisnu mitzvahs elo letzaref bohem es habriyas, that the giving of the mitzvahs is just to purify humanity. He seems to understand that it means that there's no specific meaning in each action. It's just that in doing the actions in general, one will become purified. Very strange sort of understanding altogether. It's difficult to know what he means. But based on that understanding, the Rambam then goes on to answer his question. And it's the answer which is so fascinating. This is it. Sheklal ha-mitzvahs yesh lohem tam behechlet. The principle of the mitzvahs certainly have reason. Uviglal te'eles mesuyemes tzivo bohem. And because of a particular end, the Ribbono Shel Olam instructed them. Aval pratehen hin asher ne'emar bohen shehen lipshat ha-tzivui. But the details of the mitzvahs, that's what we're told, are given only to expand the commandment, to expand the tzivui, but are not in themselves have reasons which we can understand. And he goes on to give examples. For example, he talks of the shechita itself. He says there's a good shechita, killing an animal for eating. That there's very good reason for. Why it has to be in that particular way, we don't know. Sacrifices are very important things. Why they must be brought in those particular ways, we don't know. And so he goes through the mitzvahs. What is it that the Rambam has said here? Rambam has actually turned around our principle upside down. We started off by saying that we can understand that there are mitzvahs which purify the human being. Mitzvah of Shabbos, the mitzvahs bein adam lechaveru, between man and his friend, mitzvahs of even things like that, how to treat animals, not to cause tzar balei chayim. There are many mitzvahs where we can understand that the concept that lies behind the mitzvah is one of ennobling the human being. But what about the details of the mitzvah? The Rambam says he finds the whole Medrash difficult. And what is his difficulty? How can you say which implies that there's no other reason? Answers the Rambam that second part, listen to this carefully because otherwise you won't understand it. Answers the Rambam that second part, that the mitzvahs were given to ennoble the human being, that goes on the details of the halachas. The principles, each one has its own reason. We'll explain that again. If one looks carefully at the loshon of the Rambam, at the wording of the Rambam at the beginning of the Perek, it seems that the machlokes between the two views, the difference between the two views that he brings, is not whether there is a rationality to the mitzvahs or there isn't. It wouldn't make any sense to begin to consider the possibility that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us such a complex Torah and there is no rationale behind it. It's not possible that anybody holds that. If one looks carefully at the words, the stress is on the unique reasoning of each particular mitzvah. In bringing the second view, the Rambam says, the Yesh Mishoeme, there is one who says, Ki kol tzivli ve'azhoro, mehem, every one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, Tetzas Chochme, is the result of reasoning. V'hamatoro boi tachlis mesuyemes, and there is a particular result that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from that mitzvah. The Shekola mitzvahs kulon yesh lehem tam, and all the reason, all the mitzvahs, all of them have reason. Ubiglal to eles mesuyemes tzivo behem, and for a particular end result, he has instructed them. The stress seems to be the Rambam's belief that the second view holds, that every mitzvah has its own rationale. Not that there's a general rationale for all the mitzvahs. And that's the difficulty he has in the Medrash. The Medrash comes along and says, the only reason the mitzvahs were given is to refine the human beings. So why was Shabbos given? To refine human beings. Why was Kashrus given? To refine human beings. Why was Tzedakah given? To refine human beings. Why was Shatnez given? To refine human beings. The reason is the same for every mitzvah. That, says the Rambam, seems to go against the second view. And that seems to be his difficulty. Not so much the question of whether there is a rationale or there isn't. There is a rationale, that seems clear. It would be very, very way out to consider the possibility that there's no rationale. So to summarize the two views, we would then say the first view holds that there's one, the general purpose the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from the Torah. The other one is that in each mitzvah there's a particular philosophy which the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to convey. Now we come with a Medrash, where the Medrash says that there's one general reason, to refine the human being. How does the Rambam deal with that? The Rambam divides the mitzvahs into the principal part of the mitzvah, the klal, the basis of the mitzvah, and the prat, the details of the mitzvah. But here is the big chiddush. It comes out, which part does that statement of the Medrash apply to? This which the Medrash said and which the Rambam found so difficult, that the mitzvahs were only given to purify the human being. What part of the mitzvah does that go on to? On the main principle, or does that go on to the details? Comes out according to the Rambam that that goes on to the details. On the principle, each mitzvah has its own reason. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a particular desire in each mitzvah, what he wants from that particular mitzvah. But all the details of all the mitzvahs are there to refine human beings. And so whereas we started off by saying we can understand that the principles of the mitzvahs might refine human beings, but how do the details refine human beings? The Rambam says the opposite. The principles of the mitzvah, each one is its own reason. Refining the human being, that's the details of the mitzvah, that's not the principles of the mitzvah. And we need to understand that. Because that makes it very difficult for those people who say it, and unfortunately in some degree or other we all say it to ourselves, that one can be a good Jew even if one doesn't keep the finer details. As long as the philosophy of Yiddishkeit and the principles of Yiddishkeit and the basis of Yiddishkeit is there, one doesn't need the small details that much. One can be a moral human being without it. Comes out not so simple. That the process of ennoblement, the process of refinement, the process of development in a human being takes place dafke in the little details, not in the major principles. How does that work? Before I do a little piece of Chazon Ish with you, I want to just clarify very clearly the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban. Because that difference in approach is followed down right until our day. The Ramban holds that that statement of the Medrash, Lo nitna Torah el l'taref bohem es abriyas, that the Torah was given to purify humanity, the Ramban doesn't make this distinction between the main principles and the details of the mitzvahs. He treats them all exactly the same. And he says this statement that the mitzvahs were given to purify the human being goes both on the major principle and on the details. And in each detail of the halacha we can understand how that particular detail purifies the human being. Each one is relevant. The Rambam says it's a general thing. Detailed halacha purifies a human being. The Ramban says no. Each detail purifies the human being in a specific way. Not just a general thing. It's not just an exercise in purification. Each thing, why you've got to shech the animal in this way and not in that way. And why you've got to wear clothing made of this material and not that material, all mixed up together. And why you've got to plant your crops in a particular way and not in another way. And why you can't eat milk and meat together. Each one of these things, says the Ramban, one could study to find that particular thing. How does that refine the human being? The Rambam says, don't get into that. You can study the general principles. How does Kashrus refine a human being? How does Shabbos refine a human being? How do the general principles refine a human being? But don't get into trying to work out how each detail refines a human being. Because that's a general thing. And we need to understand the Rambam. Let's do a little piece of this Chazon Ish, and then we'll see the picture very clearly. The Omnam im Amolo shel Cheker HaHalocha. Toiling in research of halacha, says the Chazon Ish, Mashreshes ahavas hadin be'ofen meyuchad b'halacha zu shehu oisek bo. There's no question, says the Chazon Ish, that research with effort in halacha roots into us a love of halacha, a love of the law, with particular relevance to that law which he's studying. So if a person sits and he does Hilchos Shabbos, that in depth, he really applies himself, he researches Hilchos Shabbos. That's why the words that the Chazon Ish uses are so important. Amolo shel cheker ha-halacha, the toil in the research into halacha. So he takes his Gemaras and he works it through, and he works it from sources, and he goes through the Rishonim, and he goes through the Poskim, and then he gets to the Shulchan Aruch, and he goes through the later Poskim. It's real hard work. That roots into a person a love for the meticulous detail of those particular halachas that he's studying. That's for sure. But in addition to that, says the Chazon Ish, Moisifo Ahavo Klolis, in addition to that, it adds also general love, Lecheker Hadin B'chol Mishpatei HaTorah, to the research of halacha in all areas of Torah. In other words, one finds that when one is going very deeply into one particular din, if one is really trying to understand one little halacha, whatever it is, are you allowed to use soap on Shabbos? One little part of the laws of Shabbos. And he goes into it with depth, and he goes into the concept, into the whole principle behind it. Not only will it become increasingly important to him, and will he develop a love and a respect for the meticulousness of halacha, of that particular din, but in addition to that, he will get a certain love and respect of the meticulousness of halacha in all areas. It will expand his horizons altogether. Ki ha'emuna bifrotim shel ha'mitzvahs bivchinas rikshi, because to really emotionally believe in the meticulous details of halacha, tzricho kinyan, that requires acquisition, ve'eneno tivis, and it is not natural. An incredible thing that the Chazon Ish has touched on. It is unnatural to believe in the halacha in terms of its detail. To believe that Shabbos is a good idea, you don't have to be a big Talmud Chacham. Any man off the street can understand that Shabbos is a good idea, and he can believe in it. To believe that Kashrus is a good idea, he can understand. To believe that Shchita is a good idea, he can understand. To believe that Tzedakah and Chesed and all these things is a good idea, he can understand. That's no problem. But to believe in the details, that becomes very difficult. To believe that you should wash your hands before you eat, one can understand. Even if you understand even a little bit more advanced, it's not for cleanliness, your hands have to be clean before you wash. I understand that too, what a lovely idea. To prepare one's hands spiritually for the act of eating because it's a spiritual thing. Lovely. But to understand that if the cup that you're using is chipped, it's no good, you've got to wash your hands again. Well, what's all that about? What difference does it make? That's not natural to have an understanding of that kind of halacha. It doesn't come automatically. It needs kinyan. It needs to be acquired. V'hamuskal hashitchi marchiko. And superficial intelligence makes it unintelligible. If one is a superficial thinking person, and if one learns superficially, and if one's approach to Torah is a superficial approach, it becomes irrational. It's not possible to understand and to appreciate these details of halacha. Kegoin, for example, lahamin ki niur habeged b'shabes uchiyuv chatas, to believe that to fold your garments on Shabbos is a chiyuv chatas, it's an issur d'oraisa. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, one would have to bring a korban if one did it by mistake, and if one did it deliberately, having been warned by two people immediately before not to have done it, one could have been given the death sentence for folding one's garments. V'lifkoa itzim, and to go chopping wood, shvus, that's only a law of the rabbis, that's not a law of the Torah. Now go and understand that. If Shabbos is a day of rest, and it's meant to be a time of thinking, and a time of complacency, and all the rest of it, why is it more serious to fold my garments than it is to go and chop wood? How are you going to understand that? It's not natural to understand that. Another such examples. Or lahamin, or to believe, he's not talking about knowing it intellectually, he's talking about believing it deeply, integrating it. Or lahamin ki akelim shenimkiru lenochli be'erev Pesach, to believe that if one sells one's kelim to a non-Jew erev Pesach, tzrichin tevilu la'achar ha'Pesach, after Pesach you have to go and table them again. Now the Chazon Ish is very makpid on this. When we sell our chometz to a non-Jew before Pesach, the Chazon Ish is very makpid that you don't sell your utensils. You can sell the chometz, I think our shtar, our document that we sign, says the chometz absorbed in the kelim. Is that right? I think it says the chometz absorbed in the kelim is sold, but it shouldn't say that the kelim are sold, because if one has sold one's kelim, if one has sold the utensils to the non-Jew, then after Pesach you have to table them again. Now go and understand that. Go and feel that deeply. Integrate that halacha. Integrate that concept. And it's still harder to integrate financial laws. When you're busy having a tussle with your friend. When his whole army of attributes and aggression are all directed against his friend. You know how it goes, as one gets more embroiled in it, you can't see that you might have done anything wrong. The Yitzrayim is gaber all over, and your Yetzirah gets stronger. La Toisa L'Cholafosim, to destroy him completely. L'Sameinov, to blind his eyes. L'Atei Moznov, and to close his ears. L'Yashe Beinov Kol Adorim, and to make straight in his eyes everything that he has done. V'Az Yikona Levov L'Hakir Mishpat B'Liras Treifel L'Atzmoy. Is it easy at that time to recognize justice and to see where he might be doing wrong? But when a man has made night like day, there's no difference between night and day, he goes through 24 hours a day delving into halacha, trying to figure out the very small details that have told us the way of the Derech HaTorah Shebaal Peh, this toil, he teris biyodo, this is a shield in his hand. This is a shield in his hand against competition with human beings and a love of aggression. And it gives to its owners, to those who do this, and this is the important sentence, a love of justice. And righteousness becomes more important to him than any money. Accuracy becomes more important. The man who's busy trying to work out a halacha or a piece of Gemara, and it's getting difficult, and it's already 10 o'clock. So he goes another half an hour. He still doesn't know what's going on. So he closes his Gemara and he goes to bed. What does that mean? If one's really going to be brutal with oneself, what does it mean? My sleep is more important to me than knowing the truth. That's what it means. If he says, this is as far as I can go, I've applied my mind to its limits, I cannot go any further, I need to ask somebody, that's a different thing. But if he could still go further, just at this stage he closes his Gemara and he goes to bed. It's heartbreaking when one sees a person reading a good detective novel and not being able to close it. So one sees that one understands such Mesiras Nefesh. The concept of not being able to close a book and not being able to go to sleep, even though I've got a long day tomorrow, even though I've got to be up early tomorrow, doesn't matter. Mesiras Nefesh, how can you put the book down in the middle of the book? That we understand such a thing. And when it comes to understanding a halacha, to understanding a din, which is difficult and it's going to require another 4 or 5 hours of research, no, it's already 10 o'clock, another 4 hours, that makes it 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. We can't do it. I've got a difficult day tomorrow, close the Gemara and go off to bed. Doesn't matter. That's the one kind of human being. He's talking about the other kind of human being that won't leave it until he's got it right, absolutely right. And if there's one word that's not in place, doing a Rambam, and there's still one word in the Rambam which the way he understands it, this word doesn't make any sense, and he still can't close the Rambam because I don't understand it, there's something wrong, there's something missing, and he works and works and works and toils and toils, and he goes 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, he feels not worth going to bed anymore, goes straight through the night, and he carries on the day as if it didn't matter. Why? What did he give up that night for? Not for a detective novel. Because truth and accuracy and authenticity is something he can't sleep without. If he hasn't got that, if he's missing accuracy in matters of truth, he can't sleep. That's it. Now such a man, that's how he works. That's how his day goes. That's how his night goes. That's how his week goes. He gets involved in a struggle with another human being. Says the Chazon Ish, is it terribly difficult for him to put his feelings aside and to say, look, let's just sit down and try and work out, oh PMS, what's the truth here? Who does the money belong to? Who does the object belong to? Let's just try and work it out properly. If we work it out, it belongs to you, you take it, doesn't matter. if I'm prepared to give up my sleep for truth, and I'm prepared to go without meals for truth, and I'm prepared to take a reduction of income because I'm spending so much time on finding out truth, am I going to get involved in an argument with you for a few pennies and ignore the truth? Says the Chazon Ish, when a man gets used to dedicating himself with Mesiras Nefesh to deepen his knowledge and to deepen his understanding and to be accurate in his learning, that turns him into a person who is able to handle himself correctly. The Chazon Ish believes that one of the most important aspects and attributes of a religious life is the ability to put one's head over one's body. That's all. Once a human being is able to direct himself on the basis of his own reasoning and not be directed by his emotions, then he's already on the way to becoming a religious human being. Because then all he has to do is learn what's right and wrong. When he knows what, those are the two things you need. You need the knowledge, and you need the power, the self-discipline of directing yourself and instructing yourself and carrying out that which you have told yourself to do and not carrying out that which you've told yourself not to do. Those are the only two things you need: the self-discipline and the knowledge. That's it. And the Torah says, "Akol b'day shamayim chutz miyira shamayim." Everything except the self-discipline you can get, the Ribbono Shel Olam will help you with. The knowledge he'll give you a lot of. He'll make it easier for you. He'll help you. He'll give you access to it. Everything else he can help you out on. The one thing he can't help you out on is the self-discipline. A human being who can't say no to himself, and a human being who can't direct himself, nobody can help him. There's absolutely nobody. No teacher can help him. No parents can help him. God himself doesn't help him. It's not possible to do that. That at least a man has to have himself, the ability to do what he wants to do and not to do what he doesn't want to do. That ability is acquired, says the Chazon Ish, more than anything else, in one's learning, by the setting aside of all things else in order to get down to the bottom of it, in order to become meticulous. Says the Rambam, it's the minute details of halacha which are metzaref the briyas, which refine the human being. What the Rambam is saying here is the same as the shita of the Chazon Ish. What the Rambam is saying is that in every mitzvah there is a principle and there are details. Let us take the principle of shechita, for example. So the principle of shechita is, yes, you may kill animals. That in itself is a principle. What does it teach us? That animals are there to serve human beings, not the other way around. The man who does not want to kill a human being, an animal for a human being, there is actually an element of immorality about that. Because we go a lot further than that. We see then the man who feels that the animal has a right of existence equal or above the human being, and by the way, it's very often above the human being. Very often the person who is terribly sympathetic to animals is not quite as sympathetic to human beings. He's prepared to see human beings suffer more easily than he's prepared to see animals suffer. That's usually how it goes. Many of the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, were very, very fond of animals and shuddered, they say of Hitler himself, that he used to shudder if he saw an animal in pain and suffering. He couldn't take it, he couldn't stand it. The tzaddik. That's how it is usually with these things. It's a complete distortion. A person who sees an animal as equal or over a human being sees that within himself too. That the animal inside him has as much right to be there as the rest of him. It's not. We need to know that you can kill the animal if that is in the interests of the human being. And one has to kill the animal if that is in the interests of the human being. The same as one has to kill the animal inside one if that is in the interest of the human being. If it's necessary for the human being to go without a meal, you go without a meal. If it's necessary to go without sleep, you go without sleep. The animal comes second. The animal is there to serve the human being, not the human being there to serve the animal. And so there's already a moral principle in the concept that we may eat meat. That's number one. But even if we go further, the principles of shechita, that the animal has to be killed in a fairly merciless sort of way. That the knife has to be clean, it has to be without any... It's not the sharpness of the knife which is so important, it's the fact that it mustn't be rough. That there's no... That when the knife crosses the neck of the animal, there's no tearing, there's no... It's a smooth cut. And that one has to cut right through the simonim, those parts of the animal which are critical to its life, and that it should be drained of blood as quickly as possible. There are things which show us already principles as the Ramban says, that while we're busy killing animals, we shouldn't become grob, we shouldn't become gross. And the Ramban says, if you go to any society and you go and you look at the butchers and at the slaughterers and the abattoirs, you see there some of them the lowest of the low of society. Gross people, cruel people, hard people, insensitive people. If you go to our abattoirs and you see a sheikh, see a man with a long beard, with Yirush Shamayim, stands in front of the animal and says a bracha with kavona, and he shechts with care and with tenderness, and he gets home, what does he do? Opens his Gemara, starts learning, goes over the halachas of shechita, does mitzvahs, goes and davens. He's an advanced human being, a sheikh, an advanced human being, a morally advanced human being, sensitivity wise an advanced human being. What's the difference? Because he's got the laws of shechita to govern him. Now let us imagine that there were no details to the laws of shechita. Let us imagine that the laws of shechita were simply, you must kill the animal in a humane way, you must kill the animal in a way which is quick and painless. That's the laws of shechita. Each one can work out for himself what that is, how to do it. Well, really, the slaughterers in our society operate under those laws. That is, that's the law of the country, that it has to be that way. And it has no effect on them. So what is it that really has the effect on the sheikhet? The principle? Or the little details, is it? We see it's the details, because the goyim operate by the same principle today. No longer are the goyim cruel in the way they kill. They kill, in effect, quicker than we do. And maybe even more merciless than the way we do. There are reasons why the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to kill in this particular way. And it's virtually painless. We're not going to guarantee that it is the most painless way. There was talk, for example, of the possibility of anesthetizing the animal before shechita. Maybe that would be more painless, but it's against the din. You can't do it. And what is it then that makes the sheikhet the refined human being? Says the Rambam, an amazing chiddush. It's the details, it's not the principle. The principle alone is, you can't catch hold of it. So you know the principle, but it doesn't change you. What changes you is the shochet sitting in the morning before he goes to shecht, and he has to start shechting at 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning, and for hours before that he's busy sharpening his knife. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours busy sharpening his knife to get it exactly right. That's what changes the shochet. That he spends more time preparing his knife than he spends killing the animal. When he comes home, he goes over the dinim, he spends more time learning, because there are so many details that need to be known and so many variations that need to be remembered. So he spends more time learning Torah than he spends killing the animal. That's what makes him a mensch. That's what keeps him a refined human being. If it was just the principle, he wouldn't have to spend any time on it. There wouldn't have to be any mesiras nefesh for it. One wouldn't have to give of oneself for it. One wouldn't have to sacrifice of oneself for it. And there would be no kinyan, as the Chazon Ish says. One needs to acquire a feeling for the minutatei of halacha. You need a kinyan, it needs to be acquired, and that needs effort and energy and besudas nefesh until it eventually becomes part of you. Nothing can become part of you without tremendous energy and without tremendous effort. And so it's not the principle. The broad principle occupies a moment of your time, if anything. Because very quickly you even forget about the broad principle and it just becomes a routine. But with all these details, it can't just become a routine. It occupies you from morning till night to make sure that you're doing it right. So we have laws of kashrus. So let's say the principle of keeping milk and meat separate, we can give all sorts of philosophies for it. Why it's important to keep milk and meat separate. Let's give a little idea. It's because of, among other things, the principle of not killing a small animal and its mother at the same time. Milk is the motherhood of the animal and it's the future of the animal. Meat is the death of the animal. It doesn't go together. It's a refinement of the human being to realize that milk and meat doesn't go together. As the Torah in fact expresses it, how do we get our laws of milk and meat? From the pasuk of Lo Tavashil Gedi Bechalav Imo. Don't cook a goat in the milk of its mother. It's that which that is what doesn't go together. A beautiful idea, very nice concept. So let's say that's all we were told. Don't cook meat and milk together, keep them separate. So a little child would learn in cheder, you mustn't cook meat and milk together. Why? Because milk is the motherhood of the animal and the life of the animal. and meat is the death of the animal, and they must be kept separate. Lovely idea, and he'll hear a drosha on it in shul maybe every couple of years. Lovely idea, and then what? How will this absorb his mind? How will this affect his actions? No way. But he comes into the kitchen and he starts working, or the lady comes into the kitchen and she starts working. Oh, there's a shayla. And now she's got to go and ask the shayla, and she's got to wait for an answer, and she's got to kasha the spoon because she put it into a pot that once had milk in it. And she's this drops into that, and all constantly her mind is on it. She never takes her mind off the kashrus for a moment. And if she does, she runs into problems. Concentrating all the time on those laws of keeping milk and meat separate. And her husband, she comes and asks her husband, so he's going to start looking up, and he's going to take down the Shulchan Aruch, and he's going to look up the halachas, and go back to the Gemara, and learn. And you have a whole thing going on in the home, around this principle, and this concept of keeping milk and meat separate. But is it because of the philosophy? No, it's because of the halacha that the whole thing occurred. If it was just the halacha, would the husband ever take down his Shulchan Aruch? If it was just the philosophy, would the husband ever take down his Shulchan Aruch? Would the wife ever ask him a shayla? Would the wife ever have her mind on these concepts while she's busy cooking? No. She would go to university before she became a housewife, and then she would learn the concepts, and that would be the end of it. That's not how the Torah is. Says the Rambam, le'nitna mitzvah sel l'tzarech bohem es habriyas. The purification process is in the little details of halacha, not in the philosophies. The philosophies are the major principles. But the procedure, the process of becoming a better human being, that's in the little details, it's not in the big things. And in fact, if we look at the Loshon of this Medrash, we'll see that it's very meduyek, it's very precise. Lo nisna Torah elo letzaref bohem es habriyos. The Torah was given to refine a human being. Letzaref comes from this, is exactly the same word as they use in metallurgy. Where you refine gold, or you refine an ore to get a metal. It's exactly the same process, you're mitzarif. What is that siruf? You can't, it's not alchemy. That was the difference between chemistry and alchemy. The alchemist thought that you could make something new. The chemist realized you can just refine things and put them together, take them apart, you can't make anything new. The siruf is not alchemy. You can't make something that isn't there. If you're keeping the minutata, if you're keeping the detailed halacha, without a knowledge of the principle, it's not going to make you a finer human being. So you're keeping all the things, you're keeping all the details, but you don't understand the principle behind it at all. If you have the principle behind it, but you're not keeping the details, also it has no effect. So you know in your mind somewhere stored is a piece of information. The reason for milk and meat is X. The reason for Shabbos is Y. The reason for Kashrus is Z. You've got it stored away in your mind, but it doesn't change you. Facts don't change people. Knowledge, information, that doesn't change people. What changes people is Mesirus Nefesh for that knowledge. Giving of their life, of their time, of their energy, of their money for that knowledge. That's what changes them, and you need the two. You need the principle, and you need the dedication to the principle. And that comes together. Letzarech Bo'emis Abriyus. If there's already the basis over there, if the principle is in the mind, if one understands the concept, then the more one keeps the details of the halacha, the more that becomes refined and refined and refined, and the better the human being comes. It emerges that there really are three sections to this whole process. The one we discussed in the ladies' shiur this morning, and that is that the whole principle doesn't start, the whole process of Torah's effect on a human being doesn't start unless you're a human being to start with. I've always given the example, you go to the zoo sometimes, occasionally you even see it in the game reserve, but for this particular experiment you're better off going to the zoo than to the game reserve, or still better off going to the circus. So you go to the circus, it's amazing what they can teach animals to do. You can get an elephant to stand on his two hind legs, you can get a lion to jump through a ring of fire, you can get a monkey to ride a bicycle. How difficult do you think it would be for a good animal trainer to teach a monkey to put on tefillin? It wouldn't be difficult. He would stand there, it would be very easy. Take the tefillin and he would wrap it, and he would be able to do a perfect job of it. How difficult would it be to teach an ape to light Friday night candles? He would stand there, you can just picture it there, the two things, and he'll go like this, and he'll strike a match, and he'll light each candle and everybody will clap. An ape can do it. You don't, for the Maisa mitzvahs, to do the action of the mitzvahs, you don't have to be a human being. What's the difference then when the ape does it and the human being does it? The difference is the effect it has. He remains an ape afterwards, and the human being hopefully is changed afterwards. He's a little bit different afterwards. There's no way that lighting candles or putting on tefillin can have an effect on an ape. The ape remains an ape. And that we have to understand with the Torah. But there's no way that the Torah can have effect on a person if he isn't a person to start with. And that's why in Ein Derech Eretz, Ein Torah. It is not Torah. It's not that he's a frum person, it's a pity he doesn't have Derech Eretz as well. It's not like that. Im Ein Derech Eretz, Ein Torah. It's a monkey doing the tricks. That's all it is. You don't have to be human to keep the mitzvahs. There are virtually no mitzvahs that you couldn't train an animal to do, but without effect on him. So the first principle is there has to be the basic Derech Eretz to start with. The mensch has to be a mensch. If the mensch is a mensch, there is a possibility that he will begin to understand the principles of the halachas. A person who is not a mensch doesn't understand the principles of the halacha. Go and explain to an unrefined person the principle why milk and meat shouldn't be mixed together. Go and explain to an unrefined person the concept of shiluach hakein. You want to take the eggs, send the mother bird away first. Go and explain to a person who isn't a mensch. He doesn't understand such things. He just knows that whatever you need, you take. And if you hurt somebody in the process, it's not my business. It's in the interests of the advance of civilization. Or sometimes, regrettably, you'll even hear people saying, it's in the interests of Torah. That's it. You just take what you need. No, you don't. You're going to cause the bird pain and suffering. Send the bird away first and then take. And one has a machlokes among the achronim on that very din about sending the bird away. Whether it's a mitzvah that you should go looking for birds to send away to be mekayim the mitzvah, or whether it's only if you need the eggs, then you must send the birds away. And the Chassam Sofer brings from this Rambam and from the Ramban that it would be ridiculous to say that you've got to go looking for birds to send away. The whole thing is to teach you how to be kind. The whole thing is to minimize cruelty in a human being. So if you already need the eggs, okay, you're entitled to the eggs, but do it by sending the mother bird away. It's like shchita. So if you need meat, okay, but with shchita. So that would be like saying, well, it's a mitzvah, and shchita is a mitzvah. Every Jew should be equipped with a knife, and wherever he sees a cow, he should say, a broch and kill it. That's it, it's a mitzvah. So it is to say that it's a mitzvah to go chasing the mother birds away in order to take the eggs. And I tell you that Ra'isi b'moyina, I've seen with my own eyes people going looking for birds to chase them away and take the eggs away, and they smash the eggs, they break the eggs. Oh, they've been the kayim a mitzvah, and they say a broch and they do wonderful things. What mitzvah is it? It's a person who doesn't understand the principle behind the mitzvah, that's all. If there's no derech eretz to start with, if there's no menschlichkeit to start with, how can you understand the principle of shiluach hakein? We talked last night about the principle of al yishaneh odom ba'achsanya shelo. A person shouldn't change his place of abode. If he stays with a certain family, he should always stay with them. If he lives in a certain hotel, when he visits a certain town, he should stay there all the time. Is it possible for a person who's not mensch to understand that chazal, never mind to practice it? Is it possible to understand it? We gave the example of Avraham Avinu himself, who was in abject poverty when he went down to Mitzrayim. Didn't have a penny to his name. He had to borrow when he wanted a loaf of bread. He had to buy it on credit. He couldn't pay for it. He had nothing. He had to leave Eretz Yisrael. Can you imagine how painful it was for Avraham Avinu to leave Eretz Yisrael? He had to because he had nothing to eat. And he had to go to Mitzrayim. And we said last night, at what hotels did he stay on the way? He stayed in little hotels with bugs in the bed, probably, if there was a bed there at all. Certainly without running water. Certainly no rooms with bathrooms and toilets en suite. Not even rooms where there was a bathroom and toilet on the same floor. Probably there wasn't even one outside. You had to go to the public place down the road somewhere. He couldn't afford a hotel that had its own. He comes back from Mitzrayim a few years later, whatever period of time it was, a multi-millionaire. Rolling in money. With possessions, with what he only had. And there he goes in modern day terms, with his Learjet and his Rolls Royce waiting for him at each airport that he comes to. And he comes back, what hotel does he go to? Say Chazal, to the same old hotels with the bags in the bed where there's no toilet in the building where it's down the road that he's got to go to. Can't he afford any better? That's the din. That's where I used to stay, that's where I stay now. Nothing has changed. That's Derech Eretz. I'm not even talking about practicing it. I'm talking just about understanding it. Just about understanding that Chazal if one doesn't have the basic Derech Eretz. There was a certain rabbi in America who was telling my father, in pain and suffering, one understands it. He's a Rav in a little town, but very dedicated to his community, and very, very hard working. And a particular family, he just gave one example, but it happens all the time, where the parents got married, the parents of a child got married, obviously, before the child was born, and they knew nothing from anything, and he took them, and he showed an interest in them, and he started teaching them. And after their wedding, they used to come to shul occasionally, and he used to invite them home and have them around his table, and he used to teach them a little bit more. And after years and years, they started becoming interested, and they started becoming a little bit frum. He got them eventually to kasher their kitchens, and then a little child was born, and he was at the bris, and he was a sandek at the bris, and he took an interest in the child, and he raised the child, and taught the child, and tutored the child. And the parents are now becoming Shomer Shabbos a little bit, and he carries on teaching the child and the time and the effort he puts in, and the child becomes Bar Mitzvah, and he prepares the child for the Bar Mitzvah, and he prepares the family for the Bar Mitzvah. Meanwhile, Chas V'Shalom is a loss in the family, and he gives up day and night to sit with the family and to comfort them and to prepare them and to help them. And the child goes up, and now he wants to send the child to yeshiva, and the parents say, this is not, we don't want our child to become a rabbi. And he works on the parents, and he pleads with them, and he discusses with them night after night and day after day, and eventually, yes, they're prepared to send the child to yeshiva. And off the child goes to yeshiva, and there he meets big Rosh Yeshiva, certainly bigger people than the rabbi from his little town in the Midwest somewhere. And he sits and learns for a couple of years, and he meets a young lady, and now there's going to be a wedding. And he comes back home for the wedding, and the wedding's going to be in his home shul. And he phones up the rabbi and says, I would like you to say a brocha under the chuppah. And the rabbi says to my father, I brought him up. Now he's met a big Rosh Yeshiva, greater than I am, much greater than I am. But after all, this is where he was raised. The Rosh Yeshiva is welcome to say a brocha under the chuppah. And it isn't understood. That's Derech Eretz. To understand that it doesn't matter. What's important is not how great the rabbi is. What's important is, am I doing the right thing? According to the principles of Derech Eretz, who is it that stands under the chuppah? Who is it that officiates? Reb Leib Gruvitz, the late Rosh Yeshiva of Gateshead, son-in-law of Rebellia, he married the daughter of Rebellia Lopion, got married in London. So he got married in a shul in London. So you can imagine that the rov in the shul in London at that time, he was a nice reverend. And this is a big Rosh Yeshiva from Lithuania, a future son-in-law of one of the greatest Lomdim and the greatest Baal Musar of the time, never mind of England. The wedding's going to take place. And all the Rosh Yeshiva of Europe were there, and all the Rosh Yeshiva of England were there. Who officiates under the wedding? The rabbi whose shul it is. It's his shul. And he must have trembled, and he must have done anything to get out of it. No, that's it. It has to be that way. But is it possible to understand those principles if one isn't mensch to start with? So what's the Torah going to do to one if one isn't mensch to start with? One doesn't understand these principles. It's the monkey. Doing the things, learning all the tricks, going through all the procedures, it can't have any effect on him. That's the first step, that there has to be the basic Derech Eretz, the basic Menschlichkeit. When that is there, when that's well established, one starts learning Torah. Now two things have to happen simultaneously. The one is one has to start learning the philosophic principles of the Torah too. One has to understand the Yesodus. What is it that the Ribbono Shel really wants from me? What does he mean by Shabbos? What does he mean by Kashrus? What does he mean by Taras HaMishpocha? What kind of family life does the Ribbono Shel Olam want in that he's instructed us the laws of family purity? It's not just the technical details of the laws. There's a principle there as well. There's a way of living. One needs to understand that. One needs to know that. But that alone is not going to change the human being. He'll stay the same. Because one isn't changed by knowledge. One isn't changed by facts. One isn't changed by wisdom. One is changed by Mesiris Nefesh for that wisdom. One is changed by making sacrifices for that wisdom. And that comes in the details. That comes in the inconveniences. That comes in the problems. That comes in the difficulties. That comes in the learning and the studying and the revising that has to take place in order to make sure that the principles remain an integral part, that the details remain an integral part of the principles and they don't become separate. That, says the Rambam, is the Yesod. It's true that every mitzvah has its own philosophy. But the details are governed by one philosophy, and that is the philosophy of Lo Nitnot Mitzvahs Elo Letzarev Bohem Esabriyus. The detailed mitzvahs were given for one reason only, and that's to bring about a purification in the human being. A human being who has the Derech Eretz to start with. He is a mensch, and he understands the principles that govern the broad outlines of the halacha. If in addition to that he will keep the details of the halacha and study those details, then it will be Metzadef Esabriyus. It will refine him and refine him and refine him further and further, so that he will find those principles becoming more a part of him and becoming more ingrained in him, that he himself will become not just a person who's keeping the Torah, and certainly not a monkey who's keeping the Torah, but he will become a Ben Torah, he will become a child of the Torah itself, that it's part of his blood, it's ingrained in him, it is him, that Yisrael, the Arayis Achadu, that Yisrael and the Torah, the Jew and the Torah, become one unit and become one concept.